All right, what's good, world? It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey, back again, episode 32, the Shaquille O'Neal episode. I think this is episode 32. I'm here with my boy Abe Schwadron. What's goodington?
Aka Abraham Lincoln Bio, back again, feeling very hench today.
Yeah, feeling pang. So Abe, I mean, before we introduce our esteemed guest, I think we got to just recap our night last night a little bit.
Oh, on the court?
On the court. Well, me at the bar first. I went to the bar before our basketball game last night for the 10 holiday party.
And good way to warm up.
An unnamed soul told me to fuck myself at least 15 different times during the evening.
No.
Yeah, man, it was awesome.
Wait, someone you knew?
No, someone I don't know. But it wasn't like, explicitly being like,
and like, what did you say?
Go fuck yourself. He was like telling stories, and he was like, and you know what I always said to them? Fuck you! And like throwing his middle finger right up in my face.
Are you talking about a stranger at a bar that you went to before we had a basketball game?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Who partook in the 10 holiday party. Shit was lit. Anyway, after that, I moseyed on over to Terminal 23 for our hoops game.
Yeah, man. Hashtag the league T23. The district. We're 1-0, baby.
The district.
Who want what?
Abe is the GM of our team for this Nike league we're in, and he drafted, I mean, I guess the evidence in the first game is pretty good at his skills as a GM. We'll see how the rest of the season goes, but we won by 25. We cracked that ass.
My skills as a GM certainly better than my own basketball skills.
What are they? Do they trump your skills as a writer?
I mean, it's easier.
Okay.
Certainly easier than writing. Writing takes a lot of thought. GMing just, that dude's pretty fucking good at basketball. Let's get him on the squad.
Oh, man. If only it was that easy. Shout out to Billy King and all those great GMs.
Isn't that how Sam Hinkie ran his operation as well?
Yeah, look how that turned out for him. Anyway, we got our boy Yaron Weitzman in here today, the host of the Chris Pod Porzingcast. I was really nervous I was going to butcher that. Also, beat writer for the Knicks for Bleacher Report. Back early from the West Coast trip, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. When slam calls, I come in.
Took the Learjet over from L.A. to get here. And, longtime slam fam, great writer, very hard worker, the pit bull of Westchester, I believe, if I remember correctly.
That's good, because I needed an AKA. I didn't have one, so you can use that if you want.
That's what I'm here for. The one thing I excel at is giving people AKAs.
Got to also give them the big-time major Throwback Thursday TD Daily.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Former TD Daily editor. Yaron Weitzman, what's up, brother? How are you?
That's a associate editor, I believe.
What did I call you?
Editor. You got to add the associate part. It's very important.
What's up, man? Thanks for coming. Your sweater is looking great.
It's cold outside.
Yeah, man. We saw Yaron over the weekend at the Slam holiday party where I was not getting cursed at for – well, I was, but not so aggressively – but had to bring the god up himself.
I barely remember those interactions, but
yeah, man, my man's Abe was feeling good on a Saturday night.
I got a little excited at the Jordan Space Jam party at Foot Locker. You know, I was pouring all my drinks into the Mike's Secret Stuff water bottles they gave us, and that's a large water bottle.
Yeah.
I wasn't really keeping track.
All right, we got to take like at least 10 minutes to talk hoops.
Hang on. You weren't doing it just at the party. You were doing it at Susan's apartment. I saw you stuffing that water bottle with ice cubes and whatever else you were trying to get in there.
Yeah. Got a little out of control on Saturday.
Abe, hit me up
good
the
to
next
see you
day.
Guys again, though.
Like it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He's like, yo, just getting up. What's wrong with you, man?
It's taken me pretty much from Sunday morning to right now to feel all the way 100%. So,
so back in the day, I could go out like 3-4 days a week. I went out Friday and Saturday this past week, and I was hungover until Wednesday. not even the slightest of exaggeration.
You made it out two nights in a week. That's pretty good.
Yeah, man.
We had the basketball game last night. I'm running around like, it feels good to sweat out this alcohol from Saturday.
Dude, I was laying in bed before the party last week, and I was like, I really don't think I'm going to go to this thing. And then I was like, I'll just go early and leave early. And obviously, I ended up staying until like 2 in the morning like an idiot.
Of course, always.
But Yaron, Let's talk Knicks, since that is your supposed expertise.
My area of expertise. You know what's so great about this is all I ever want to do is talk Knicks and Knicks beat, and nobody ever cares. Like, my wife, she wants to hear. She doesn't want to hear anything about it, so I assume we have, like, 3 hours for this now, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. We got the rest of the day blocked off.
Perfect.
Not worried about the magazine. We're good.
I mean, after the next, like, 40 minutes, I'll probably leave, but you can keep talking.
That's
into
fine.
The microphone.
That works great.
Yourself? We'll stick a mirror right here.
That's fine for me.
Well, the thing I've always been, necessarily fascinated by is like the banter between the Knicks beat reporters.
I think that's more fun than the actual team. Like the stories you get in the media room, the characters, like people, I'm assuming most of the people on this follow these guys on Twitter, like your boy Isola,
yeah,
Mark Berman, Al Izone, Ian Begley. These guys are hilarious.
It's like the conglomerate of
it really
reporters.
Is, and it's like it's actually real. I'm not saying Berman and Isola actually hate each other, but the banter between it is actually like I may or may not text friends occasionally some quotes that come that you hear in the media room. It's hilarious. It's so much more, but it's also it's tough because like everyone's kind of going for the same stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, what like. So what's your approach? Like, I don't know if you want to give up too much here, but I mean,
all the trade secrets.
This is your first year working any type of beat,
yeah.
Correct? So like, when you walked in, were you just like, oh, you know, whatever, I'll just get a couple of quotes from Porzingis, a couple of quotes from Melo, call it a day? And has it progressed? Like, oh my god, like I'm here, 41 games out of the year, I gotta like really get creative and work on different angles.
It's like, hard, like the 41 games, like it's a lot, and I'm already feeling it in terms of like how many times you're gonna write about Porzingis or Carmelo or the triangle. I approach it a little differently. I figure most people get the tabloid stuff from the Isola and Berman and the daily stuff from them. That's not really my job, so I just try to figure I can maybe inform Knicks fans a little better. So one trade secret. If everyone's talking to one guy, I'll try to go talk to somebody else because I don't need Carmelo's quotes. I can go talk to Justin Holiday on the side and he can explain to me something about the defense, and that could be more valuable in terms of going to a story later on.
Are there any like guys like that, like a Justin Holiday, that you've like realized are really good quotes so far?
Kyle O'Quinn, I don't know if he's a good quote. He's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, and there's,
that we know.
There's athlete funny. I think you guys know when like an athlete says something funny and it kind of like everyone laughs, but it's not
like
really
polite,
that funny.
The polite laughter of like, oh shit, he made a joke.
Right. But Kyle O'Quinn is actually hilarious. I mean, the funniest story I've heard from him, and it wasn't something I saw, but I mean, Clyde Frazier told them on broadcast that like they were on a train and O'Quinn put on a conductor hat and started walking through and saying tickets, 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 like stuff like that. He does all the time. So he's absolutely hilarious. I find Lance Thomas is good. Justin Holiday is good. Courtney Lee. It kind of goes to my whole thing with my problem with PR guys a little bit is I think these guys, if you approach them and you tell them you want to just like actually learn about basketball, they're happy to talk.
Yeah. Funny story about Kyle O'Quinn. My boy was telling me the other day that he went to the Knicks Blazers game. I guess that was probably like 2-3 weeks ago at the Garden.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
And he had good seats. So like he went out a different exit than most people would, than the general public.
Oh.
And he said when he walked out, the first person he saw was Kyle O'Quinn at the halal stand eating.
That's absolutely hilarious. That doesn't even surprise me one bit. I didn't know, but that's hilarious. Like,
but I was like, wait, every post game locker room I've ever been in is like catered, and he just is like, nah, I'm going to get the $5 halal meals.
Very relatable, though.
As
somebody who's seen what the Garden food looks like, I wouldn't blame him for going outside. That stuff looks like poison in that media room there, and that's the same stuff.
Anytime I'm going to the Garden, I've never eaten in the cafeteria. I'm always like, I will just pay the $2 extra to get like something.
Right.
The good
that's disgusting.
That's like a secret that Lang Whitaker told me like early on.
Don't eat the Garden food.
Yeah, like early. It's like, yo, just take your $10 or $12 and like go to the concession stand.
Yeah.
No matter what arena you're in, for
pro
that matter.
Tip.
Barclays, I like Barclays food.
Barclays is pretty good, yeah. But, well, actually, the coolest was at All-Star in Toronto, instead of having media room food, they just literally gave out vouchers of like, I think they gave like $20 to everyone, which is a buttload.
That's a lot.
At a concession stand. So, if you've listened to previous podcasts, I think Adam Figman told the story of when we were in line behind, like, Tyronn Lue at the rookie-sophomore game, and he was just piling on the concessions just like we were. But anyways, we're getting a little left here.
Nah, we love it. Yeah, food, man. Great.
Kyle
O'Quinn
and food.
But, I mean, the thing, I've had this discussion with a few people, actually. Yaron, you and I spoke about this at the Adidas thing we were at. And I hate to, like, keep name-dropping, like, shit we went to, but, you know, this is, like, life. Hey. Yeah. But, like, this team is actually likable, which has not always been the case in the past few years. I mean, Melo, I've always been a fan of, always thought, you know, not even from, like, a strictly media style. He's great with the media, but he just seems like an overall, like, a good dude. Porzingis is just, like, already a legend in my eyes. Yes. And also just cool as hell. Like, Derrick Rose is you know, sans all the things that happened in the offseason, has actually, like, come out, played really hard. And I don't know, there just seems to be, like, a good vibe around the team from a peripheral standpoint. So, like, in a locker room, what is it, like, a joyous locker room? Is it a loose locker room? What's going on?
It is. Well, this, okay, so, like, the caveat, as you guys know, is we, even though we have access to the Knicks locker room, that doesn't necessarily mean you see the right players. They to keep them out of sight, or the players, like, to stay out of sight for as long as possible. But, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, a lot of it's Kyle O'Quinn. You'll hear Kyle O'Quinn yelling stuff a lot. But Billy Hernan Gomez, and the European guys are all really close. Kuzminskis, Hernan Gomez, Porzingis. These guys are funny.
Oh, you got the names down.
Wait, Kuzminskis?
Ellen?
Oh, Ellen DeGeneres. Got it. Okay, carry on.
I don't even remember the question. It's a good locker room. It's fun. The team is likable. That's what's cool about it, that they're playing well, but they're likable guys. Like, they're guys, how they play, and also personality wise, Melo especially.
Yeah, and I mean, you, like, the Knicks, there's always a story, no matter what. I mean, there's always some wacky stuff going on with either one of the players, or, I mean, in this year, definitely the exec. So, you know, Phil Jackson has just, he can't seem to keep himself out of the news. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's because I think he's trying to keep himself relevant by saying all this wacky shit, or maybe he's just, like, high off peyote and he can't help himself.
I guess the latter. What's weird, though, is he refuses to talk to local media.
Yeah, and, like, I know. It's so
bizarre.
And
every time he talks to the national media, he gets in more trouble. It's very strange. I don't know what his
You're right.
Thing
he
is.
Gives, like, the long Q&As, and then it's like,
it always backfires. Yeah. Whereas if he just, like, held a weekly, or even, like, a bi-monthly,
I think it'd be
State of the Union, like, people wouldn't even really pay attention, but maybe that's right. Why he's doing it. But I don't know, like, the whole thing with Melo, I don't understand why he's, like, taking jabs at Melo through the media. I get that this was, like, his thing when he was the coach of the Bulls, but he's not the coach of the team. Like, the whole thing is just so bizarre. It's unprecedented.
Yeah, I don't think these guys, I say this sometimes and people find it surprising, but I don't think the players respect him. I think they view him as, like, this kooky old guy who's kind of, like, comes in and preaches random triangle stuff. And I think that a lot of fans don't think that's the case. They think that, like, oh, they grew up watching him, Coach Jordan, and, like, there's this reverence for him, and that does not exist.
It does not.
You don't get that stuff, like, on the record quotes, but if you ask questions about the triangle or about, I'll give a good example. I asked, like, NBA 2K came up once, and I was asking Courtney Lee about playing it. I'm like, what do you normally run? He goes, oh, pick and roll all the time, pick and roll all the time. Right. So I throw a joke. I'm like, oh, there's no triangle? He's like, nah, and he starts laughing. He's like, nah, I don't have that version, I guess. And, like, it's not, like, there's a little point in this and that. It's like, it's just in terms of, you get a vibe for how these guys feel about it. And Carmelo especially, it's really weird. Like, and Carmelo's always the one who has to answer for, he's the team spokesman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's fair that he has to, like, deal with this with, you know, no other team president goes out and will just trash their players.
No,
the
it's
media.
Really not exactly.
Then, also, like, from a completely outsider perspective, someone who's not, I'm not following the Knicks, like, insider shit from a day-to-day basis because it's not my team. I mean, I hear all of the stuff you guys are talking about, but not on a everyday minute-by-minute. Yeah.
Gotta,
like, where is
the Wizards news is hard-hitting, man. Gotta keep up.
I hate you. Where is Jeff Hornacek in all of this? Like, I feel like I haven't heard from him as a person who's, like, the intermediary, supposedly, between those two sides of it. Like, I just feel like I haven't heard a quote from him the entire season.
He does a good job. He's a good politician. He does a good job of kind of disarming these quotes, but not, he answers them, but in a really polite, calm way. And he's good at shutting down these stories because he's always asked about it. And that's part of the thing where Phil throws him and Carmelo under the bus, because every time whether you think it's okay, whether you agree with Phil or not, the distraction comes in that every time he says something, then the next day or two, Carmelo and Hornacek are going to be asked about that.
Right.
And Hornacek's really good. I mean, that's not an easy job to play. No. Like, to be Phil Jackson's head coach is not easy.
I guess my point is, like, he's being completely marginalized, at least from an outside perspective.
Yeah, I disagree because, like, after a few games, he was just like, I'm not running triangle anymore. It's like, this is
triangle aspects. Triangle
yeah.
aspects.
Yeah, that was even that was his thing going into preseason. He's like, oh, you know, we'll run some aspects of the triangle. And then, like, I don't know, they started, what, like 1-3 or something? And yeah, then he was just like, you know what? I have Derrick Rose, Carmelo Anthony, and Kristaps Porzingis. I'm not running the damn triangle. Like,
it's really funny.
And, like, the thing, like, and Abe, and one of you guys said, I'm sorry, that, you know, it's probably, it must be hard to be Phil Jackson's to coach for Phil Jackson when he's a team president. But, like, Jackson's trying to coach from the 11th row, and, like, it's just you can't do that. It's just – it's so – I don't know if unprofessional is the word. Certainly unprecedented, but I don't know, man. I kind of – I have a lot of respect for Hornacek and the way he's handled it because, you know, he's not – out there saying wacky stuff and he doesn't bash Phil Jackson.
Right. He's kind of, that's why I said the politician. Because I mean, Phil, I think it's bad leadership would be the word I would use in terms of
for Phil.
Yeah. The way he's in the showing up at practices and sticking things, talking about the triangle and all that stuff. I think that's just poor leadership and from a management perspective. And I think Hornacek's done a good job. He's not coming after that was an issue last year reportedly. I wasn't around the team then, but with Fisher, right? That him and Fisher didn't see eye to eye at all, and Fisher was trying to separate himself a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean the thought process was, and maybe not from Phil, but from the general public, that was Fisher was going to be like a puppet for Phil,
right?
And he just wasn't having it. Yeah, which I respect as well. Obviously, like things spiraled out of control pretty quickly. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to think about Phil's, you know, quote mind games and the way he coached, and looking at like the new era of coaches and like how. You know, a Kenny Atkinson will coach in Brooklyn or even like an Earl Watson. It's like super motivational. Like the Nets suck, but at least they go out and they play hard every single night. So like comparing and contrasting like old school coaches, I don't know. I feel like the younger players might gravitate towards that some more.
It's also it's like Popovich is old, right? Mm. But he's not he cares about winning. He's not caring about proving his system is right. And that's the difference. Sometimes it feels like. I mean, look at the Spurs. They played two towers. They played corner threes, fast, slow, pick and rolls. They're always zagging and when other teams are zigging. Sometimes it feels like Phil's more interested in proving that the triangle can win as opposed to actually winning. Like if you offered him, you can win a championship without the triangle, or you can run the triangle and not win a championship. Which one would you choose?
I think the latter.
I think so also, and I think that's where it comes down to the issue.
Yeah,
I mean the man more than basketball. Has plenty of championships.
I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, there's. He's definitely going to write a book about his time with the Knicks.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to read that one. It's going to be called How I Drafted Porzingis and Saved the Team. That's what it's going to remind everyone.
Exactly. But I don't know. I'm just thinking about that coaching thing a little more. Shouts to my point that I made, or probably just Jack from
shouts to my point. I like that. I'm going to start using
that. That was the podcast equivalent of liking your own Instagram photo right there.
All right. To tone it down a little bit, or probably something that I just jacked from another interview or podcast I heard, but like, when you look at the Wolves, like I was kind of feeling this way earlier in the season. You know, Tibbs is such a hard ass on his players, and when you're dealing with three young guys who probably never been coached like that their whole lives, and you kind of see the results. Like I kind of feel like I don't know, it'll probably work out eventually, but maybe he's not the best fit for this team, and it's the reason why you know they got off to such a slow start and they can't adapt to you know getting. Screamed at even when they're up like 20 just getting their asses chewed out every single play. It's a lot to take.
I would say it's kind of like a process results thing. Like I don't think that's what's why I think that's going to work. Where I'll disagree a little bit is that I think it's okay. Like I don't think they care if they lose.
Don't you ever come on this podcast and disagree with me?
Shouts to my point. So process over result. Like I think they're building slow. It's a long term thing. There, that's okay if there's some losses now to build the infrastructure. Yeah, that's always the key.
Okay, well maybe.
But do you enjoy getting fucking screamed at? No, during said losses. Like
no, I wouldn't want to play. I wouldn't want to play. Like I love when fans love that stuff because like any of us. You know, in slam when we have a yeller boss, because that happens a lot in the slam area. but if you have a boss who screams at you, like I would imagine that would suck, and you don't want that. Nobody wants that.
You're just tense.
Yeah, but people love, like fans love when athletes have, like when the coach is a disciplinarian. But even though no fan wants to work for Disciplinary.
I mean, kind of, but like, I feel like one of the more popular coaches in the league now, and it's probably just because of the team, is Luke Walton, and he's not like a disciplinarian. If anything, he's like a fun and young, and
I wonder how much age
lets them lose.
Yeah, I think, but I wonder how much age has to do with that, that he can still kind of relate to being a player. Like, he can get out there and like kind of practice with these guys still. I mean, they got Meta on the bench. He's as old as him at this point.
He certainly participate in the extracurriculars.
Facts.
In LA.
Yeah, I'm loving
very
like
relatable.
I'm loving the whole like weed thing around the NBA too right now.
it's gonna become a major free agency thing. Like the Celtics are gonna start nailing free agents now.
Pete, aren't you headed out to Portland? Man, are you gonna go stop by our boy Uncle Spliffy's?
Yeah, I'm definitely hitting up my man's Uncle Spliffy first thing, as soon as I take that first step on the hard Portland street, I'm hitting up Uncle Spliffy
for sure. Speaking of Throwback Thursday, man. We got to pull that podcast audio up again.
I know. I'm like almost scared to go back and listen to it. That was so early in our podcast. I think that was our first guest. And we were like drilling him with like questions about smoking weed.
I'm pretty sure we spent like a solid 15 minutes prior to that being like, do we say marijuana? Do we say weed? Like, what's the proper cannabis?
Reefer.
I think cannabis is actually the
preferred.
Corrected us, right?
Because before we interviewed him, I was like, we're just going to ask a few questions about weed. He's like, cannabis.
But anyways, go get that in-person audio, bro.
But what did he say? What was his quote? It was like, I play better, or I think people play better when they're high. I don't want to misspeak here. But
no, he just said it had exactly zero effect on playing basketball. Chauncey Billups was the one who this week said that he always hoped that some of his teammates played when they're high because they were better. In quotes, some of my teammates like side-eyeing Rasheed Wallace.
I was gonna say, who do you think he's talking about?
Rasheed Wallace. But Yaron, you went to the Nets.
But Yaron, you smoke weed.
Yeah,
so. I can give you my
take on weed. With weed.
Hey, I went to the Grateful Dead show last year with my dad. Yeah. Was that last year?
It's basically like smoking weed.
There you go. Nothing else needs to be said.
It's like Soldier Field with a giant bong, essentially.
But you were in the house for Nets Lakers earlier this week, and we're on hand to see the Larry Nance dunk.
Yeah.
So why don't you just give us like a step-by-step recap of exactly what happened.
I'll phrase this perfectly because it was a really bad game, and I think like it was one of those games where I was kind of half in my laptop, half paying attention. And by half in my laptop, I mean almost 90% of my laptop.
It's funny because this was literally the first thing I was going to ask you is, you know how this shit will happen where like that will happen, that play will happen, and you're like, fuck, I was on Twitter like
so I missed the Swaggy P pump fake free throw. I missed.
Right.
The Larry Nance something, I guess like maybe, I don't know if I looked up if it was a timing thing or if it's like, sometimes those plays you can kind of get a feel for like the buildup. It's like a weird thing, but you kind of feel it happening. It's like I saw him spin. It was on the other side. I was sitting baseline. It was on the opposite baseline, so I didn't get the perfect view.
Floor seats?
Yeah, good one.
Jeez, this guy.
I call up your friend who's got the floor seats. You know,
who's going that?
You said the guy's seeing where Kyle Quinn's getting his halal food.
Oh, he did say that. Shouts to your point.
Well, wait, whoa. He didn't pay for those tickets. He got them through.
Even better.
That's my point. I don't even remember what I was talking about. Larry
Nance. You were baseline.
Oh,
you spun. You reached out to guard him.
What? I reached out to guard him.
You got dunked on.
Holy shit. I guess that's the perfect summation. It was just a ridiculous dunk. He didn't seem to care, though, afterwards. Like, people were asking about it. He was just, like, in the locker room. He was just kind of, like, chill. I mean, he was obviously – I mean, I know they lost, but you were, like, a little more – I mean, I don't know. Maybe the loss changes it.
I guess it's just routine for him at this point.
He's probably got to be in the dunk contest, right?
I saw quotes from like a previous story that he said like he wouldn't even know what to do with how to go about that.
But he strikes me as one of those people that like needs to dunk on someone.
Yeah, that's what was cool. What was cool also had the I like when a move when it's not just like an alley oop. I like when the guy creates the space first, like with the spin.
Also, a big fan of the fact that it happened on Brook Lopez.
Yeah, that was great. And he apologized after. You see Nance apologize after?
He did.
He went up to like Lopez. I think Deadspin had this on.
Yeah,
like,
I do that too, man.
He went up. He's like, sorry, man.
No, man. Apologize to Brook Lopez.
Why do you hate Brook Lopez so much?
Just never thought he was very special of a player. He's one of the most overrated players in the league.
Ooh.
Well, I don't think he's overrated at all.
I would never say this to Sean Kilpatrick, by the way.
What, that Sean Kilpatrick is overrated?
No. No, just that anything bad about the Nets.
Oh, nah.
See, and Abe, you were worried about having takes before the show. Look at you.
No, I've had this take for a hot minute.
Okay.
You can ask all the angry Nets fans that have ever come through the office.
But you're still, like, you're not really proving your point to me at all.
No, I just
I just think
he puts up empty numbers on a shitty team. We've seen plenty of guys. The reference to Brook Lopez being a top player is always his stats, and I just don't think that having empty stats on a bad team proves anything to me.
Okay.
Soft.
Fair enough.
He averaged like 3.5 rebounds one season. He's 7 feet tall.
I don't know how that happens.
You accidentally get three rebounds just by standing. If you're a point guard, you accidentally get three rebounds just by being on the basketball court for most of the game.
Eddie Curry used to drive me crazy with that stuff also. The lack of rebounding also. Like the 7-footer where you're like, how are you not getting more than 4 rebounds a game?
That was probably for effort. More than anything.
I would guess so, but I guess that's what, you know, hot take Abe saying about
literally, if you're 7 feet tall, you could literally be blind on a basketball court and get 3 rebounds.
Wow.
Do you actually think that? Like, let's say you actually put a blind guy on the court, right?
Yes.
Really? It's interesting. I wonder.
Hypothetical sounder alert. Yes, I actually do think a blind 7'2" man could get 3 rebounds in an NBA game.
Like, where would he position himself?
Just...
Would he know he's 7 feet tall?
Just put him, just move him to the restricted area.
Wait.
The top of the restricted area. Stand with his arms
outside 3 seconds.
Spread wide.
No.
48
minutes.
That's
the dumbest thing I ever heard.
48 minutes, 3 rebounds.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
What are you talking about?
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
He would feel someone in his area, box him out, and there it is.
Well, how would he know, like...
where the ball is.
Okay, there's so many things about this.
This is my point.
Number one, if he's blind, the guy wouldn't be like, oh, like, I'm going to get boxed out with this blind dude. He would just, like, step around him as soon as the ball goes up.
Come on, man. You know as well as I do, it's all about feeling the person behind you while you... while you're awaiting the rebound anyway.
But what a
You don't need to look at someone to box them out.
You're 7 foot and blind... how would you know, like, how tall everyone else is proportionately? Like, do you know the difference?
You're the tallest.
But how do you even know that?
Because I tell you when I position you at the restricted area. Yo, bro, you're 7'2".
So do you run back on to the other side of the floor?
You just clasp his hands together for 48 minutes, and the ball's going to go in between there at some point randomly.
I'm imagining those, like, games, the arcade games, where you try to, like, get, like, the toy with a claw out of the...
that's what it's like being a 7-foot blind man on a basketball
clasping
court.
Clasping your...
Jesus, Abe, what are you talking about?
I like how Abe stood strong, though, with his point there. Like, he didn't go...
If we got any
double
blind
down.
7-footers listen to the pod, I'm willing to test his theory and slam.
Oh my god,
pick
we will pay
run.
For this. Strictly, we'll get it on video and everything. It'll be a feature in the magazine.
Fine.
All right, done. Jeez, man, I'm totally thrown off.
I really hope this segment was not offensive in any way.
No, it was not meant to be at all.
New America, man. More PC.
Yeah, that's right. We can say whatever we want.
I'm sure.
New America.
The gloves are off.
Lopez probably has great vision, I'm sure.
Yeah, but certainly not blind. I don't know. I'm not going to say I was a fan of Brook Lopez, but I've always thought he's like been properly rated.
Eh.
All right, fair enough.
I'd rather have Clint Capella.
Dude, Clint Capella is good, man. I like that dude a lot.
That's my point.
All right, fair enough.
There you go. And that was just a random name off the top of my head.
So when Brook Lopez gets traded to the Wizards, what are you going to do?
Stop being a fan.
Oh, I can't wait.
No, I can't wait till Brook Lopez comes through the Slam studio for the next podcast.
That is going to be awkward.
Brooke, you've always put up huge numbers. We're big fans.
How do you feel about going blind?
Can you put on these sunglasses and go to the nearest court, please? Big fan.
I'd rather have Yusuf Nurkic, man.
I mean, wouldn't we all?
Yeah.
Literally the greatest center of all time. Greatest Bosnian center of all time.
Yusuf Nurkic would wash Bill Russell.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It wouldn't even be close.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, anyways, moving on.
So, speaking of international players, what's the Knicks, like, international part of the roster is pretty dope.
Who's Minkus?
Yeah, who's Minkus? Billy Hernan Gomez.
Yeah, Billy, remember, not Willie. Billy. Yeah. Even though it's spelled with
a W. Does he make a point of that?
No, he's not. People ask. He's pretty good. I asked him once, how come you don't correct? And he talks really quickly, and I couldn't understand a word he was saying when he was explaining to me why.
So do you think that's, like, made Porzingis more comfortable?
Yeah.
Having
though
those guys around?
Porzingis being a god of basketball has also made him plenty comfortable. Like, he's just, Porzingis, I mean... It sounds funny. The English thing was a huge difference for him coming. Like, he speaks really fluent English.
Yeah.
And his coach in overseas spoke English, was a former NBA coach. So I think that was a major, like, I don't think that was ever an issue, comfort with him.
I remember I was listening to Francesa pretty recently, and he was like,
why?
What?
And by pretty recently, he means every single day in the
office. Well, he hasn't been on this week, so that's not true. But yeah, I was listening to the first 10 minutes just to see what he's saying. He was like, Porzingis, his English is a big problem. He'll never be like, that's why he'll never be the big star in New York.
He said that? He actually said that?
Something along those lines.
First of all, I'm shocked that Francesa was talking basketball, not like Yankees free agent
especially
signings.
Especially talking Knicks, period.
Yeah, and then Knicks. Like, it's always like college basketball, like the white coach, the old white coaches he knows.
Oh, you know? Jay Wright. Jay Wright is his boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Call up.
He had that long Coach Cal interview, too, recently. Like
the greatest interview of all time, you mean?
Man. Coach Cal, just,
Coach Cal explaining why he can't run for president.
Just on Molly's, like,
oh, is that what I missed? Was it promoting his book?
Yeah, he was doing his big, well, promoting himself, period. But
yeah,
then he also doing his big book tour. And he was like, it was right after the election. He's like, Mike, I can't be president. I can't do it. He had like something where like,
I'm going to drop, so I'm going to give myself a little promotion here. I was with Cal. I somehow got into the van that Cal drove around like that day, like, the day Whoa. To promote his book.
He was driving?
Not him, sorry. The van, like him, three friends, and like the Kentucky PR guy and me for like 7 hours.
Wow.
Wait, whoa.
What came of this?
This is going to be a story, hopefully, soon we can say. But Cal.
Yeah, you can't like bury that.
No, it's going to be a story. We can, we'll make
so
sure.
So is he like completely insane, like off camera as well?
He's just always on.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. So I quote unquote like officially interviewed him early in the morning, and I'm like, oh, these are good answers, you know, I'm like getting good stuff. And then I hear him on five different interviews later, I'm like, oh, I'm just getting the talking points.
Yeah,
like every other person.
Yeah.
But he loves that, like, he's asked about the presidential stuff. He loves being like he's going on CNBC.
He's a celebrity.
He's going on CNBC promoting his book, and he loves that they're asking him about what would be your advice to President-elect Trump? Like, that's like, to him, that's like,
who cares?
That's like why he made it, you know, because he's like a leadership expert. It's interesting.
I've always been so bewildered by like athletes giving their takes on hot issue, hot topic, like serious issues like that. Like, these guys play sports for a living. I mean, their lives are so different than everybody else's. They don't like relate to the normal everyday citizen. And to be like, so what do you think about, like, I don't know, President Trump being elected? And they're
the
like,
the funny
well,
thing
it
is, it's like, and he's not even, I guess, like, yeah, he's being, he, or players are being asked. Feels like Cal, like, he wants to be doing that. Like, he's like, he's putting himself in the position to be like, I can give advice on being a leader and leading people.
I guess. I don't know.
Advice is roll the balls out.
No, it's a really strange phenomenon.
The five best 17-year-old basketball players in the country.
It's a strange phenomenon.
I wonder how that even, like, happened. I guess, I don't know. We don't need to get into this. This is just going way too far.
How do we get this from Francesa? Oh, Francesa and Porzingis.
Oh, yeah. The last thing I want to say about Francesa is, like, some people take, like, you know, like a five-hour energy or, like, drink a coffee, like, 2:30. Peter, every single day, like at 1 p.m. Is it 1 p.m.?
105.
Like, I start to hear the music, like, oh, and he taps the volume button on his computer. I'm like, all right, he's recharging for the afternoon.
Well, your boy gets out wild early, so I need something. I need something to
keep
me.
Pretty well timed for you, actually, yeah.
The last time I listened to Francesa, I called Francesa Day. Like, I was on a drive to the Mets game with my dad, and like, I'm like, oh, we have to prepare. Let's listen to Francesa. And in that, in a 15-minute stretch segment, they were talking about, he was like challenged to name the 1970 Mets infield, and then he was going after a listener for not having a cable package that allows him to watch the Mets in Philadelphia. He couldn't understand like why he didn't have MLB at bat or whatever it was.
He's the best, man. The
legend.
Best of all time.
The Pope.
I mean, I'm gonna be so sad when he hangs him up at the end
hangs
of 2017.
When he drops the mic.
Who's gonna fill that seat, man?
Abe,
yeah.
What?
Talk about Brooke. We'll have Brooke Lopez as your first guest. That'll make some news.
Let's get it.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I mean, the only other main thing that's like NBA buzzworthy is like people resting.
Oh, you're so right. Go on.
I don't know. I like resting.
Yeah.
I had a good sleep last night.
Rest.
So after that basketball game we played, I slept like a log, bro.
Hell yeah.
Wake up.
All right. Well, I guess to hash this out a little bit, the big. Not big news this week, but I guess LeBron did not travel to Memphis to play in the second game of a back-to-back or a home-and-home with Memphis. And a reporter asked him, you know, basically, why aren't you going? And he was like, I've earned it in this league. I don't need to answer these questions anymore, blah, blah, blah. And there was, like, some blowback, being like, you know, people are paying for these tickets, they're paying to come see you, you're the hottest ticket in the NBA period, or one of three probably. So like, where do you guys stand? Do you think players should rest? Do people have right to be upset that these players are not playing in games?
I mean, I think it's like we got to kind of parse this out a little bit, because the immediate thing that a lot of people want to do is say that players from a previous era would, like, they would never do this.
Never true.
But even if it's irrelevant, that's completely irrelevant to, like, the question at hand of what's happening now. So I basically completely dismiss anything that begins with that, like, logic.
Completely
different league, completely different style of play, completely different training programs, players, completely different demands on their time and media appearances, and just everything is so completely different that I don't think you can compare those two things. So, like, we should throw that out immediately.
Well, anytime an ex-player comes out and, like, bashes a player for resting, the first thing I do is always go and look back and see how many games they played in a particular season. It is almost never 82.
So. Also, the thing is, like, it didn't, just because they did it doesn't mean it worked. Like, I like seeing LeBron play well until he's 36. Larry Bird, there was just that interview the other day with ESPN where he said, like, he retired early. What'd you say?
Don't get a start on Larry Bird here, man.
Oh, why? What did Larry Bird do to us?
He didn't do anything personally to us. We just always felt that I personally feel that he's incredibly overrated. But for this reason is that, like, he only played like a very good to great 8 years.
Right. That's why. So, like, maybe they did it back in the day, but how many guys fizzled out? Like, I have this argument with my dad sometimes, like, I get cranky about, like, baseball injuries and innings and stuff. And, like, you know, back in the day, everyone threw 300 innings. Innings. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not hearing about the guys whose arms went out after, you know, 2 years, and you didn't know why.
Like, what's my man's name? Fernando Valenzuela pitched, like,
it's
400 innings, and he was good for, like, 2 years.
Right, so it's okay to evolve. But I would say, like, I get, like, I'm pro players resting. All of, I took a nap yesterday, okay, and I do nothing. So, like, I'm pro that. But I do get, like, it's one of these things where, like, it's not but, it's an and. Like, I do get why fans are upset. Like, 100%, right. If you paid to see LeBron, I get why you're upset, but it doesn't mean it's LeBron's fault.
I just want to throw in, and I completely agree with you, you know, seeing, I mean, it's hard for, it. Honestly, like, not to hype our own selves, but, like, it's probably a hard thing for us to really have an honest conversation about, because we are fortunate enough to be able to go and see these players live, you know, with a press credential and up close, and so maybe it's not 100% fair for us to even really talk about this without having, like, a normal fan who works a normal job and saves up to go see LeBron or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I can't help it but feel a little bit like it's a strange thing where, like, someone in Memphis or Milwaukee is, like, that butthurt that they didn't get to see a player on a different team. Like, aren't you a Grizzlies fan, bro?
I got a hot take for you. Ready for this?
Like, yes. Let's hear it.
You guys gonna like this? How about skin color? When's the last time someone got upset about baseball players taking a Sunday afternoon off?
Very true. I mean, baseball players take games off all the time.
Yeah,
literally.
So you cannot.
They also play every day, though, pretty much.
For sure, but we don't have to.
But
go
it's also
all that.
Way less strenuous of a sport.
Yeah, like, baseball players pull a hamstring out for, like, 3 weeks. You know?
Also, no one, like, gives a shit about baseball. I'm sorry, but, like,
also a fact.
Oh, I'm so sad that Mike Trout didn't play. Right. Like, so I have 150 other chances / it's Mike Trout. It's not LeBron James.
Right, that could be
the most marketable athlete, biggest star in the world, arguably.
That could be it for sure. But I do think there's something to that. People like the idea. NBA always draws those kind of reactions from people.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, I just to go back to my previous point, like, if I'm a actual Bucks fan or a Wizards fan or an actual Grizzlies fan, and there's all these people in my city that are pissed that, like, Steph Curry didn't play, I'm like, well, fuck you then. What are you? Why are you coming to Verizon Center or whatever to see some dude from some other team? Like, fuck off, bro. This is our house.
Memphis got a win out of it, didn't they?
That's my point. Like,
and I mean, you're wrong. Like, when we were talking earlier, you brought up that at the Lakers Nets games, like, there was a huge amount of Lakers fans there for the game. So, I mean, if that's like, you just gotta get better.
I don't think, like, real Memphis Grizzlies fans are mad that LeBron didn't play, are they?
They probably. That's a good question.
Probably just all shitty bandwagon fans in the area who are wanting to see. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm just. I totally agree that paying for a product and then not getting the product sucks, and we've got to figure out a way to solve that or just live with it. But I'm just playing a counterpoint here that, like, who are the people that are truly mad about this?
You think if you have, like, those a diehard people. Grizzlies fan, I'm curious, like, diehard Grizzlies fan has a ticket to last night's game. Is he more happy about his – is he got a win. Is he happy about getting a win or more upset about missing LeBron? Well, that's a good question.
I mean, I think the ultimate would be getting a win over LeBron.
Yeah, I guess
you
so.
You get, you know, the both – yeah, but come on. Both worlds, obviously. Yeah, I don't know.
Can't have it all, man. Yeah. You can't have it all. I don't know. It's an interesting – debate, and one that I'm kind of surprised about that has, like, taken on a life of its own. I mean, everyone needs a rest now and then, especially, like, and I mean, for a guy like LeBron especially, like, you don't want to be playing your best, healthiest ball in December. You want to be playing it in June. So I understand it from that perspective. I also, you know, sympathize with fans who pay all that money to go see, like, if your son's favorite player is LeBron James, you pay, you know, $400 to go see LeBron, you and the family, you know, concessions,
total
nine, and he's 100%. Not there. You know, it sucks. It's really unfortunate. So I don't have an answer.
It's on the league.
And I don't think people were really looking for me to, like, provide an answer. But, you know, something – there has to be some sort of happy medium that gets filled, whether that's in the league refunding people. I don't know.
Well, I know, like, the new CBA, which we're not going to talk, but, like, I know they're supposed to start the season. They're going to have less preseason games and start the season earlier.
Which is
to
amazing.
To have less back-to-backs. Like, I know they're addressing that, so that's one way at it.
And, I mean, I credit the league for trying to you know, one, keep the players happy, but also keeping fans in mind for situations.
Right, it's
like
business,
these. So, best-run league in the world.
I don't know. The NFL's pretty good, guys.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I haven't heard anything bad about them recently. But, yeah, I mean, Yaron, just to go back to your earlier point, like, the NBA, you know, outside of a few guys who act out, like, this is the guys are usually well-behaved. They're excellent with fans and media, and, you know, they show face. So, you know, anytime there's backlash against NBA players, I always get pretty annoyed, especially when you look at other leagues across the sports landscape and A, how shitty they're run, and B, how shitty the people in the league are. So, I don't know. It's the NBA rocks, man. I have no other way to put it.
Wow, that was a nice little bow on the pocket. The NBA rocks, man.
But that's about to be the name of this episode, I think.
Hell yeah.
All right, you got any more takes to let off, or are you guys good?
I mean, I think I let them. I think I emptied the clip already.
All right, good. Yaron, appreciate you coming by, man.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have you on again some point during the season when we get a bunch of actual, you know, real guests.
When that Coach Cal interview
comes out,
either say no
to us or don't answer. No, I'm kidding, man. It's good to see you.
Yeah, next time don't have me as a fallback. You know, I'll just be waiting. Thanks, guys.
All right, peace, man.